When Melissa and I started Cults, Crimes, and Cabernet, it was just a conversation between two best friends about true crime over a glass of wine. It quickly grew into something much more. Our weekly wine night transformed from a casual chat into a passion for advocacy.
We were empowered to take action and use more than our voices to support families in their search for answers. After a year of covering different genres of cases, Whitney and I chose to narrow our focus and take a journey covering cold and unsolved cases in season 3.
So we invite you to pop a cork and grab a glass because we have work to do.
This is Cults, Crimes, and Cabernet.
This episode contains content that may be disturbing or sensitive to listeners. Discretion is advised.
All right, my name is Jaron Spohr. I'm the morning anchor at KFDX.
Hey, my name is Curtis Jackson. I'm the chief photojournalist at KFDX.
Awesome.
Nice.
First of all, thank y'all for wanting to come on our podcast.
Yes, we love it.
Well, thank you for letting us come on.
Yeah, it's a little bit different. Have you guys done a podcast before?
So I do a sports podcast on the side, but that's the only kind of thing I know about podcasts.
I have never done this before.
Well, it's really easy.
So easy.
So don't stress.
All we do is just chat about true crime, and we are going to be talking about the Gregory Keith Mann Jr. case today, which is one of the most baffling cases out of Wichita Falls, Texas.
Mm-hmm. And he's most known by his family and friends just as Keith. I mean, his dad's name was Gregory as well. No one really knows him as Gregory, though. Everyone only just talks about Keith Mann.
We kind of started. So kind of how it all started, we started Unraveling the Mysteries is what our series is called. And Curtis has been here way longer than I have. But we just kind of done a couple, you know, cold cases. And this was one that we've always heard about around here, especially around Wichita Falls area. And, you know, every time we do it, a cold case and talk to, you know, any kind of police or anything, they just said the best way to keep these going is just keep refreshing people, which is kind of how the whole series came about. And this was one that I think we did on the anniversary of his disappearance. Yeah. And so it was one that police told us or wanted us to do. And so it was definitely an interesting case, especially when you dive into it more than, you know, usually news stories are like a minute 30. So, but these let us really dive into it. And so there's a lot of stuff I found out that I didn't know beforehand, for sure.
Yeah, but instead of doing a minute and a half long story, you know, these we get to do 15 minutes, 20 minutes, 25 minutes. So it's like an hour to us in news time, you know?
Yeah.
It is. I worked in the news for a brief moment. And it if you get anything over 2 minutes, it's, you know, what do we do? How do we get that much footage?
Yeah.
It takes a lot of time.
Yeah, it definitely does.
Were y'all given this case, or had you stumbled upon it yourself?
Curtis, I actually hadn't done any before, but Curtis has done a couple stories on it, just, you know, anniversaries or anything like that. But when we first decided to do Unraveling the Mysteries, we reached out to the police department, and this was one of the ones that they wanted to talk about. So it was kind of a little bit of both. Curtis had already done some on it. I think he even knew the family a little bit from doing stories.
Yeah, I worked with a former reporter, Taylor Newcomb, and we met the family and spoke with him, I think, back in 2015. So I'd already knew a little bit about it, but just through that.
Yeah, and kind of what when we talked to the Detective John Laughlin, he kind of does his cold cases by whenever they happen. So, like, it just happened to be we were around the anniversary of Keith Mann. So that's one that he wanted to look into and talk about.
Do you know how many cold cases are in that Wichita Falls area? Is there a lot?
Yeah,
there is a lot.
Well, dang. I mean, I lived there for like 3 years and then we moved back to Florida. I never really hear about a lot. I knew about Keith Mann, but other than that, I'm like, I don't know too many other just like up and vanished people.
Well, that's another reason why we actually wanted to do it, because there was, I think, over 60 of them.
He's got a chalkboard in his office with just names from top to bottom.
Yeah, and the thing is, we knew about 5 of them, like, really well. But after that, there's a lot of them you don't know about. And even Curtis, from being here, he didn't know a lot about them. And like you said, you were here for 3 years, and you didn't know a lot about them. So Yeah, there's, and that's another reason why I wanted to do this series, is to highlight some of these that a lot of people just don't know about.
Yeah, and some of them date back. I'm trying to think. I want to say that there's like some 50s or 40s.
I think there was one from the 50s. Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Crazy.
People really only know about the big things that happen in Wichita Falls, you know, like the Damien Waldrop situation.
Yeah.
But they don't talk about all the lesser known things, obviously, the missing people. But it's kind of a where it's located, you know, it's halfway between two much larger cities.
Mm-hmm.
People, it's an easy place to nab somebody.
Yeah, and that's kind of what happened on a couple of the cases that we haven't done stories on him, but he was kind of telling us about, where being like a passerby would come through and, you know, murder someone or whatever, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah. And I think what was the gunshot murders case? That was one that they think could be someone that was just passing through.
And then the Tamara Holknecht one, mm-hmm. someone had gotten a tip like up in Michigan or something.
Yeah, someone got a tip in Michigan.
From someone at a bar just randomly saying, yeah, I killed someone named Tamara before or something like that.
Yeah.
And then they started checking that out, but I don't think they got anything out of that.
Yeah, so.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, let's get into Keith's case.
Okay.
So he was born on February 19th in 1977, and he was just kind of like your typical kid. You know, he played baseball. He, don't remember if he was a Boy Scout or not, but he was very active. He was one of those athletic kids that was into everything. His family was very tight-knit. They liked to, you know, all load up, go to Keith's baseball games, and really just hang out. Just, I mean, your average family. There was never any concern with who Keith was going to be as a person.
Yeah, and you talked about baseball. That was something him and his dad bonded on. His parents divorced, I think, when he was younger. Mm-hmm. And he lived with his mom at first, then moved in with his dad. But it was something his dad and him kind of bonded on was baseball.
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't remember what position he played.
I don't remember off the top of my head either. I don't know if they mentioned exactly what position he played.
Yeah, but he played for Rider, and then he ended up going to a community college on baseball. Mm-hmm. One thing that I learned is he was born in Alamogordo, New Mexico, and that's actually where my son was born. And it's crazy because it's a very, very small town in New Mexico. Yeah. I was like, holy moly, nobody lives there.
I think that might actually, now that you said New Mexico, I think that's where his mom, I said Arizona, but his mom, I think, is from New Mexico, yes. And then, I think it was his junior or senior year of high school is when he moved in with his dad and went to Rider and
finished up. Yeah.
It's very easy to get New Mexico and Arizona confused because they're very similar.
Yes, very. Especially, Alamogordo is like right down on the border, very close to Mexico. But overall, he was just an all-American teenager in my mind. Like, he's super cute. I can only imagine all of the girls in Texas loved him as a teen. Seems like a really great kid.
Yeah, no, and he was, I believe, engaged at the time or was about to be engaged. So it's just, you wouldn't think, like, he would run away because everything was, like,
beginning
his life, you know?
Well, I mean, he had gone to the junior college. He realized that college wasn't really his thing, and he left the junior college, came back to Wichita, and was looking for a job. He became a car salesman for what was Ray Roberts Ford, I believe, which is now a part of the Patterson Mile of Cars, if you've ever been to Wichita Falls.
Because I had never heard of the Ray Roberts, and I was like, I wonder if they like went out of business or like what really happened. And then my husband said, he thought it was Patterson.
Yeah, I think that's what it is now.
Yeah, Mr. Patterson just bought up all of it. He sells every type of car, so it's fine. If you just say Patterson, you know he sells cars at this point in Wichita Falls. He worked as a car salesman, and I know that one of the perks that we'll talk about here in a little bit on the night that Keith went missing is, as a salesperson, you were allowed to drive a demo vehicle off the lot every night. You got a pick of a few vehicles, and it was kind of, you know, like a roulette situation. You just got to pick which one you wanted to take that evening, which I think is a really cool perk.
I know. I'm like, maybe let's start that benefit in our podcasting jobs.
Yeah. Like maybe on the side, we can work in a dealership or something.
Yeah.
Yes, part time. That's all we need.
That'd be fun.
So the But
honestly, he was killing it as a salesman. In my mind, the day he went missing, he sold, two cars that day. Mm-hmm. He didn't have a lot of money. He just moved into the apartment complex that he was actually going to be living with his fiance. She was getting her stuff together. She actually already had a job lined up there in Wichita, which I couldn't find out where. And I don't know why I wanted to know where did she have a job in Wichita, but she was young as well. And she was actually vacationing with her family in the Dallas area the day that, or the night that Keith went missing.
Yeah. He had, I think she had just graduated from college too. So.
Yeah. They met at that community college, but she had, while he came back home. And I'm like, oh, that is just like the start of their lives, which like totally bums me out, because I'm like, what does she do as this, you know, young woman that is she was in love and now he's just missing. It bothered me thinking she was supposed to start her job on that following Monday. Did she start it? Like, I don't know why this is what I obsessed about, because I guess maybe as a wife, I'm like, what would I do if I was about to be married and my significant other just disappeared?
Well, it's funny you mentioned that, because Curtis and I both were curious about what is she up to? What is her family up to?
Yeah, where is she?
Where is she? We talked to, you know, his family, and they hadn't heard from her really pretty much since it happened. They lost contact. I think the last time they called her and her family answered and basically told them not to call again. And it was just...
Like, maybe we can reach out.
Yeah.
I happen to know that she did move on. She did get married. She did have children, and she lives in the Dallas area. So I did find that out.
Okay.
There we go.
Yeah. Now, they were going to move into these apartments, and it's the Fountain Gate apartments that still exist in Wichita Falls.
Yes.
They're still there. Same location off of Barnett Road. I had many a college friend that lived there when I was in college, and they were affordable. They're still one of the most affordable apartment complexes in Wichita Falls.
And it's not a bad area at all. Like, this is not rough area at all, where a lot of crime happens whatsoever.
It's near Memorial Stadium, you know, so it's really not a bad area.
It's one of the most sought after areas as a real estate agent in Wichita Falls. You know, everyone wants to move to that southwest side of town over by the stadium where the new build houses are, the new subdivisions are going in. Everyone loved that side of town. So it's not known for being dangerous or a lot of criminal activity.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Being in the news, we don't get many calls about anything going on in that area, really.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We had that one crazy shooting, but that was.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Was that at those apartments?
It was like right behind them.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah. But that was kind of a fluke incident. I've been here almost 4 years or almost 5 years at this point. I can't remember anything ever over there.
Mm-mm. May 10th, 1997. Keith went to work that day. He did sell two cars. He picked a bright red Mustang to take home that evening and headed back to his apartment.
Such a 20-year-old car to drive. Yeah.
It is. Like, which one's the flashiest and going to give me some ladies, you know, even though he was engaged. Yeah. Which one's
he was going to go out with friends. So maybe what's the best one to go out with friends in? I don't know.
Yeah. Well, when he went back to his apartment, he did not have funds. And we know that he did not have any money at that time, because he even asked his boss for a gas voucher to put gas into the demo vehicle, because he was waiting for his paychecks, and he was supposed to get paid, have two paychecks the following week.
Yeah. For like a significant, like, I'm like almost going to change my career path, because I mean, it was like $1,500 for selling two cars.
Yeah.
I was like, good gosh. And that was back, you know, early 90s. I'm like,
well, that's why it's like another red flag. Like, he wouldn't just have vanished.
No.
He'd have some good checks. Yeah.
You can vanish on Monday when you have money.
Yeah, you have the checks.
After you cash those funds, for sure.
Yes, definitely.
He went back to his apartment. He waited for some friends to show up. They showed up in a Nissan Pathfinder. I believe it was black in color. Yes. They picked him up, and he was starving. It was dinner time. But again, he had no money. So he had borrowed his fiance's gas card, a Phenamart gas card. And there's I don't think Phenamarts even exist anymore, do they?
No,
I don't think so.
I think it was a very North Texas thing, that Phenas aren't a nationwide chain.
Yeah, I was like, I don't Shells ever or remember like it. Yeah.
So she had a Phena gas card that he could purchase food with at the gas station. And the friends took him to that local Phena Mart, which was just at the other end of McNeil. So it wasn't a long distance away, which, I mean, if no one has been to Wichita Falls, the whole town is not very far away. You know, you can get anywhere within 15 minutes if you hit every red light in town.
That's literally what they sold me on when I got here, when I was was going on my interview. My news director said, everything's within 15 minutes. I was like, all right.
You do not believe that. And then I moved there. I was early for everything because there's no way I'm going to get all the way across town.
I was the same way. I would show up like 10 minutes early before work and I was like, oh, there is really no rush hour traffic. Yeah.
There is zero traffic ever.
Yeah. So it's not far down the road. He grabs some food from the gas station. I could never find what kind of food. I'm assuming typical gas station. I don't know, corn dogs, nachos, hot dog, something along those lines. And the friends wanted McDonald's. I heard some conflicting reports on this, though, and I was not living in Wichita Falls in the 90s, so there's several McDonald's in Wichita Falls. There's four? How many are there?
A lot.
It's been a minute since I've been.
There's probably four or five at this point.
Yeah. So I wonder which one, if it was like the Southwest Parkway one.
Some people say that it was the Southwest Parkway McDonald's, you know, further up by Greenbrier. But I don't believe that one was there in the 90s.
No, that wasn't there.
No.
That's one of the newer ones. Mm-hmm. My only thought is it has to be downtown McDonald's on Holiday or the McDonald's on Kemp.
Kemp.
Well, yeah. There's a McDonald's right there at the other end of McNeil.
But was that one there in the 90s? I thought that was a newer one, too.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that.
I think that one's a newer one. Looking by the outside of it, I think it's a newer one. Unless it just renovated everything, which is possible.
Yeah.
That area over there was not as industrial. It was always all of the residential areas because when the tornado came through in the 70s, it took all of that out. And they just built residential right back in that area until, I would say, the last 15 to 20 years. There wasn't a lot of commercial properties out there.
Which I'm going to pretend was early 90s. Was 20 years ago. Yeah. Okay.
Just not 2002 or anything.
No. Yes. I lived in Wichita for 16 years. So I'm fairly confident
and
in my
being a real estate agent, you know the area because you're driving around it so much. Yeah, I never went anywhere, guys. I worked from home, stayed at home.
That's what I do. I go to work and come home.
So but I'm going to, I would think it would be the one on Kemp because if they went down McNeil towards Kemp to where this Phenomart location was located, it makes more sense to go to the McDonald's on Kemp than it would be to come all the way to Southwest Parkway. Mm-hmm. But they had plans to go mudding behind Memorial Stadium, which is over off Southwest Parkway. So the routes that they're taking is kind of all over Wichita.
Yeah.
It's not very gas friendly.
No, they didn't care about that then.
It was less than a dollar. Granted,
like you said, it is with all within like 5 minutes of each other.
True. So. That's true.
But it is a weird route. It is for sure. Yeah.
So this whole mudding thing, I was trying to picture exactly where. So behind the stadium, there's just like open land there.
There used to be. Now it's all houses. Yeah,
yes.
Back in that time.
Since I've moved in, there's housing there?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And which Curtis might know better than me because have you lived there your whole life, Curtis?
Yeah.
Okay. So over there, like going towards Lake Wichita, you used to be able to mud. There used to be trails all the way from, is it Fairway up to Memorial Stadium? Like you could go all the way along the lake.
Oh, okay. Kind of that little back.
Before all those resident.
At the end of Fairway.
Yeah. Before all that residential areas used to be, or all the neighborhoods used to be in there. You used to could drive, you know, ATVs or whatever back through there. So I don't know if that's the location they went to or it was just in the open field behind the stadium.
Well, because they took their Pathfinder. They didn't have ATVs. They took that to go mudding that day. Obviously, I'm glad he didn't take the.
And I want to say the parents talked about how it was raining around that time. So it is possible it was just in a field behind the stadium or something.
That's probably most likely.
Yeah. Which it kind of shocked me. They didn't do it for very long. I think it was like 45 minutes. Like they go get their food, then they mud for like 45 minutes, and then they are taking them back home.
Well, as someone who has grown up in the country and has been mudding many a time, because that's all you can do in small towns in America, it gets boring real quick. You can only do so many donuts in the mud.
I have never been mudding in my life. So I'm like, well, that's really quick.
Okay, so I actually have, but the first 15 minutes is really fun. After that, it's like, all right.
Really? Okay. Yeah. I'm just thinking I need to get my money's worth if I'm going to have to clean up this big freaking mess.
Yeah.
So essentially they do this mudding for 45 minutes, then they go to a car wash, and I'm like, oh, I'm proud of them. Cause I can't imagine many, late teens, early 20s, just like, oh, I need to clean my car right now. So,
yeah.
And also I think they were on a time constraint because Keith had told them he has to meet someone at midnight or 12:15.
Yes, yeah. 12:15.
That's the weird detail that we've talked about.
If he had a deadline to his fun,
yes.
Perhaps they said, okay, 45 minutes is all we got. Let's get it, get our donuts out, get over to the car wash. And still to this day, they've not said which car wash it is. There's several along Southwest Parkway.
Mm-hmm.
There's one right there.
Right there on the corner. That would be, I would think, would be like,
I would assume that's
one. And that one looks old. So.
Yeah,
that one's been there a while. I would assume it's that one as well.
Yeah.
So
his Pathfinder.
Mm-hmm, his friends drop him off around 11:45 p.m. that night.
And they see him go up the stairs.
Mm-hmm.
They saw him go in the house, but they at least saw him go up the stairs.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Now, I don't know a lot about these people. I don't know if you guys have met these two friends. I know it was a guy and a girl. I can't remember the girl's name. Chris is the guy. All of this information is coming directly from them as far as what time they dropped him off, him having a meeting at 12:15. That's all coming from them. There's no one else that can corroborate what they're saying, correct?
Yeah.
Okay. That's what I thought. But
and there's no way to timestamp anything because they had surveillance footage at the gas station from where he picked up dinner before all the other activities. They never found video footage from McDonald's, which I found surprised because doesn't every McDonald's ever have security footage?
Yeah,
maybe not. I mean, they probably did back then too.
Yeah, and they might have it. They
just it would be strange if they didn't, in my opinion, at least on the outside of the building, maybe not on the inside of the building like they have now, because we've covered several cases where McDonald's CCTV footage
in the early been used. Or in the 90s, because this was late 90s, but
so I was surprised by that.
Yeah, and a lot of street cams and stuff like that wasn't used back then. Some had it, but not a lot. But that would have been nice to have.
Mm-hmm.
I think too, because we could have seen when he was headed to mudding, when he was on the car wash or whatnot.
Absolutely no cell phones.
So no cell phones.
There's no GPS anything.
Yeah.
They didn't even have LoJack then. Confirmed that the car went somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
We're only going off of Chris's story.
Yeah. Yes. Pretty much.
Yep.
Because that's all we got.
Yep.
Yeah. And that's what the police know, just basically what they've told him.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the last time he was ever seen or heard from.
Mm-hmm.
After that, how did we discover that he went missing?
What was it, about 1 or 2 at night that night? I think it was about one or two. He had that meeting at midnight, but about 1 or 2 that night, remember the dad said that they heard it sound like a car out front at the church, but they didn't go out to check it, and they wish they would have, because when they got up the next morning to go to church, the car, car was there, and it was in a spot at the church, or it was at the church, which was a spot that Keith liked to park at a lot when he would go to his parents' house, but it was a spot his parents told him not to park at anymore. I guess the preacher or someone got upset about it. So they told Keith not to park there, and so Greg was like, he knew not to park there, which that's what started the red flags for the dad was, okay, he's parking somewhere he's not supposed to park at, and he knows he's not supposed to park at.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he was also supposed to come over Mother's Day. It was Mother's Day.
Oh, it was Mother's Day. Yes.
Mother's Day.
They had plans and everything.
Yeah, he was over, and his fiance was supposed to come over, and the fiance came, and he didn't, and they hadn't heard from him. And that's kind of how the search, I guess, started.
But it's awesome that his dad was able to be like, okay, that's the car that he was driving, to kind of narrow down that window. Because if he hadn't shown up, let's say that day, they didn't see the car. I mean, literally he could be missing for days and they not have a clue about it. I mean, he is like a 20-year-old. So
I also have questions, because how did he know which vehicle Keith chose from the dealership that night?
I was going to say that too.
Which, like, I'm how sure did it they had, know? I'm sure it had dealer plates on it. I'm sure and I'm sure there's only so many demo cars that he's been able to have access to. It's probably rotated a good 5 or 6 different cars that he's been driving this whole time as working as a car salesman.
Yeah.
He didn't have his own vehicle, did he?
I don't believe so.
I
was borrowing a dealer's car.
Yeah. Okay. I just wanted to make sure of that.
I mean, why pay for a car when you
I know,
have, exactly. you know, like when you have this amazing benefit of,
and only like having to pay for like a first time apartment, like
and I'm sure that's why he didn't have any funds, because he had just moved into that apartment,
just moved in.
And after security deposit, first month's rent, last month's rent, whatever it is they determined from a 20-year-old at that point, I wouldn't have any money left either.
Yeah.
Now his fiance did go to the apartment, but didn't notice anything out of the norm. Mm-hmm.
Correct.
There was 3 beers. Everyone talks about 3 beers being taken out of the fridge, and it's like he had set them in various locations. Well, one was half drinking.
Came out of his fridge, or if he brought them into the apartment, maybe from getting dropped off.
Yeah, okay. I think that's what it was. I think that he took the beers with them when he went in the apartment.
Okay. Yeah, I think from their time, like muddying, they probably were drinking. Okay, gotcha. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. But one was half drank. Half empty, half drank sounds terrible.
Half empty, life, I guess.
Yes. One was full, and then one, I don't remember what the third one was, but they were set in different locations in the house.
Yeah.
It wasn't like he set them all on the table and then went to change clothes for his meeting. One's on a table, one's in the bathroom, and one.
Well, you got
to
carry one with you at all times.
You know, travel beer.
But it's possible, I guess, the one he was drinking, maybe he set the other ones down and was still drinking as he was like walking around the apartment or something.
And then he's like, oh, dang, I lost my beer. Let me grab another one.
Grab another one. Yeah,
it happens.
But essentially from this point where he's reported missing by his family because they have not heard from him. It's very unlike him, especially because he knew his fiance was coming into town that day. I think she was getting there that afternoon around 2. Yeah. He had plans with his mom. Yeah. And the fact that he missed it all was very, very strange. He didn't show up for work on Monday to get his paychecks, even more red flags. And I think it's after this point is when his parents make a formal missing person.
Yeah, I believe it was the following day, the Monday. I believe that's correct. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, this is what baffles me the most. So I am assuming their searches are done for him. In the area, but there's not a lot of, you know, there's people that go missing and there's conspiracy after conspiracy. There's nothing when it comes to Keith. He just disappeared.
Yeah. Well, that's one of the strangest things I think that's about the case, because all the stories that we've done in the past, I had never heard the story about him meeting someone at midnight that night.
Really?
Really?
Yeah, or supposed to be meeting someone.
No one can say who he was meeting.
Yeah, no one knows who.
And no one came forward saying, hey, I was the person he was meeting and he was in good spirits, which is a little sus.
Well, it's weird because them finding the beers and stuff in the apartment and the apartment not being like messed up makes you think, okay, he at least made it inside and nothing happened to him inside. So it makes you think, okay, whoever he was meeting after that, that's how he went missing. But we just don't know who it is.
But then why the car exactly where he would typically park it?
Okay, so here's the theory I have on the car. Okay. When the dealership arrives to pick up the car, because they have to get the car back, and the parents approach the car, the trunk was partially open. Mm. It had been popped, but not fully opened. And when the police open it and look inside, there is a side panel, which, you know, like in a vehicle, when you have your trunk, they'll have those little side doors for your car jack, tools, safety kit, whatever it is that car's bonus features or whatever you're gonna call it is. And the thing that one of the side panels was ajar. So either pulled off or open or something. So not to be this person, but could he have been meeting someone to make a drug deal? And that's where he kept the drugs.
Yeah, I mean, who knows?
I think that's one of Deborah, his mom, or I guess his stepmom. I think that's one of her kind of conspiracies. Did he meet someone, you know, that Keith didn't want to tell anybody about, you know, because he was doing something illegal, and did they take off with him, or you know?
And in that same conversation, when you are doing a drug deal and you plan a meeting place, what's better place than a church? You know, that's a public place, quote unquote. Let's park here where Keith knows he's not supposed to park there. And if something bad goes down, setting a car alarm off, yelling, he knows that his parents or his dad's house is just across the street. Mm. It's kind of a safety blanket.
See, I almost think the opposite. If I was going to do a drug deal, I would not want it to be across the street from my parents.
But what if it's your first one and you don't know what you're doing?
That's
and you're
true.
Just trying to
and
stay
you're nervous.
Safe.
Yeah.
And it possibly could have been a drug deal, but I definitely think the reason why he was parked where he was parked was because he was meeting someone there. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it was for a drug deal or not. That is one of the conspiracies I have heard. I don't know if it was or not.
But I
do think that's where they met at, whoever he was supposed to meet.
I think that or somebody parked his car there knowing that that's where he parks, but didn't know that he wasn't supposed to park there.
Could be. Mm-hmm.
Very true. Because isn't it, I think it was reported that he was a very short dude at 5'6"-ish. So the person that came to pick up the vehicle was actually much taller than him and would typically have to put the car all the way back as far as like adjusting the seat. And he said he didn't have to do that this time. Mm-hmm. So was he driving it? I don't know. Yeah. I mean,
and nothing else of Keith's was found inside the vehicle. There was a tape in the deck, like a music.
Oh my gosh. That's so old.
And that was something we did talk to the parents about, and they didn't think that was too suspicious since he just took the car.
Mm-hmm.
And so maybe that's why there wasn't a lot of his stuff in it yet.
Sure.
Did they say the keys were in it?
The keys, I believe, were in it, weren't they?
Yeah, I'm not sure.
I can't remember.
I don't know if the keys were in it, but I do know the car doors were locked and the alarm was turned off.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Did not alarm.
For some reason, I was thinking the keys were either in the car on the floorboard or something, or they were on the ground near the car, but I can't remember if that's right or not.
Yeah.
So are there any other conspiracies like you guys have or theories?
I've heard.
Okay, because I've heard one while in my time in Wichita, but I don't know if I want to say it.
The only one that I ever heard was the drug deal one. That's really the only one. Because like we've talked about, there really weren't a lot of conspiracies about this case, whereas a lot of the other cases we've had a ton of different, mm-hmm. This might happen, that might happen. The drug deal was really the only one I've heard from anyone, really.
Yes, most believable.
So,
yeah.
I've heard things about the car dealership that he may have stumbled upon or had issues with, and that that's probably as far as I'm going to go with that. But,
and that someone took care of the situation?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
I do know that where the new Ford house is built, there has been conspiracies that there may be remains underneath.
Yes, that's where I wasn't going to go, but yes.
Oh, I'll go there.
I guess there was some construction being done or like concrete was poured after the fact. And that's while I was in Wichita, that was kind of what I heard had possibly happened, is he had stumbled upon something if it was whoever had worked there, higher ups, in their drug deal situation or whatever. But it seems weird that it was at like midnight, because why would he be meeting work people at midnight? Yeah. So that's kind of where I was just like, I don't really know.
That's the strangest thing, is like, who are you meeting period at midnight?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And if it wasn't anything like a big deal, why didn't that person come forward and said, hey, yeah, you was meeting me. We were just, whatever.
Trading Xbox games or PlayStation games, whatever.
Okay. Yeah. Or what if it was a woman? Like, what if he was, meeting a girl and she had a husband? I don't know. I'm just making up stuff now. But because this one is like, there's nothing. Like, they have no clue. Do you know where, like, any searches were done? Did they go out to, like, the mudding spot and search all of that area?
I don't know about the searching efforts, I guess.
Yeah.
I couldn't find much.
Well, I don't think they searched
downtown.
I don't think that location specifically would be of any relevance, because there's at least Chris has said that we saw him walking up the steps.
Yeah, but we can't just believe Chris.
No, I know, Chris, but I feel like they would start at the apartment and go out from there, or from the car and go out from there, as opposed to the mudding location. I think that would be kind of further down on the list.
Like an accident happened at the mudding station, and they're trying. I would literally follow every single step that he did that night to see if something, because I wouldn't automatically believe Chris and say, hey, he could have.
Yeah, I think we had some video from shortly after of them searching the apartment complex, but
Okay.
But that's the only one I know of for sure.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, no. But as far as like conspiracy, that's really the only one. The family's got some weird ones. There was an alien one that.
Oh, dear Lord.
Everyone always goes to aliens. And
yeah,
I don't
the mom
get
talked
it.
About that one. There was an alien one. Yeah. He was abducted.
You never know.
Yeah.
You never know. I do have to applaud his family. Like, even after all of this time, they keep his name in. They're doing something for his birthday and his the time he always when he, I never know how to say it because I don't like saying the anniversary of when he went missing, but the around that time, like, they have kept it in the news. His sisters have done amazing work on their website and getting his story out there.
That's the thing. I applaud them really because I'm sure it's hard on them. But year they're doing a podcast, they're doing something, you know, like you said, remembering him on the anniversary of his disappearance for his birthday. They're always doing something. And I'm sure it's really hard on them. So
his dad, you can tell, is affected by this every single day.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That was the thing when we did the interview, his dad was really emotional during it.
He wakes up just beat up.
Yeah, thinking about it.
Yeah.
I know his stepmom also said, you know, they're very private people and this has really shook their entire family unit up a lot, having to be as public as they've had to be with everything.
Yeah.
And you can tell that when you interview them, they're both kind of quiet. Now they're so thankful that you're there because it's getting the news out and everything. But yeah, especially it's funny because you go back and look at a lot of the clips we did right afterwards and Greg is like the one interviewed and everything. And then when we went and did the story, he just really didn't want to talk, period.
He did,
but he's just beat up. You can tell it's wearing on him over the years.
Well, it's been a long time.
So when the local police had, you know, recommended that you cover the Keith Mann case, did they give you anything? Like, as far as, oh, we know this for sure. Like, or... nothing. Like after 12:15 or after 11:45, essentially, they know nothing.
They really didn't give us any other info other than, let's see, what was the last thing? That he went up to his apartment complex and then the next morning they found the beers and stuff. That was pretty much the last known thing they have of
Keith. Man, only if there was like Ring at cameras then, and you could just see who came.
Yeah. You know, a lot of churches have surveillance now, but I don't think that one, obviously, I would assume that one didn't at the time since we had no idea about any surveillance video. So,
yeah. Or even like the apartment complex coming in and out. Sometimes they'll have, you know, those, which a few cases Whitney and I had covered, like that was the major lead, was seeing their car leaving their apartment. But this one is just like, there's nothing. And it just frustrates.
The junior high right across the street. No cases.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. From basically when he went up at 11:40 or 11:45, whatever time that was, went up to his apartment. That's the last we know of anything up until they went to his apartment complex. Well, they found the car, I guess, in the morning about 8 or 9. So that's kind of your gap of when something happened.
And unless you hold on to the fact that Greg said he heard something around 1 a.m.,
Around one or two around that time. Yeah.
Smaller window.
But also, you can't guarantee that was the car he heard. It could have been any car on the street.
It's a Mustang, though. It's probably loud, but it could have been any other.
He told us it sounded like Keith's car. So I wonder if it's a car that Keith has driven before.
Yeah.
Which also might be why he recognized the car when he went outside.
Very true.
It might be one that he's taken a couple times. I don't know.
Yeah.
And I mean, there was never any, sorry, I'm just like throwing all these questions. Keith never had enemies or was like involved in anything. I never read any reports that he just came back into town. Like, how many enemies can you make in a month?
Yeah. Yeah. No, his family didn't know of any and the police didn't know of any.
Okay. Yeah. This is just perplexing.
It's a really strange case. Yeah. I mean, of the ones that we've done, like the murder ones, the missing person ones are the strangest. They are so strange.
Yes, I'm right there with you because you at the end of the day, you have no idea, were they murdered? And where they say people run away, not that many people can successfully run away for that many years.
Well, he had no money.
That's he did have money in his savings account, and it was never
$100.
Touched. but I was never judged either. I mean, $100 is $100 when you have to use a credit card to get gas station food.
Well, that that's the thing. You didn't have any money. Just there was a lot of red flags with it because of him just running away. There's a lot of red flags that, like, you would think if he was going to run away, he'd wait till he got his check on Monday. And usually signs of, like, runaway, maybe they have a conflict with a family member, but he never had any of that.
Or with his fiance. Yeah. You would think, he mentioned something one time, hey, we're leaving, or she's going with him or something.
But. And if he was already planning on just leaving, why would he have gone to the graduation? Like, there's just a bunch of stuff. Yeah. It's just weird.
Yeah. The missing persons ones always baffle me.
Yes. Yeah. Because, there have been, we talked to when we talked to the police, there have been cases where people just ran away and years later they find them, you know. Sure. But it's just like, this one just seems so unlikely that that's what happened.
Yeah, but they'll find them and they'll say, hey, I don't want to be found. I don't know I'm here. Yeah. Legally, they can't tell their family, but, they said that this isn't the case. They haven't heard anything. You know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, at that point, would they usually close the cases, though, and be like, okay, we're not actively looking for this person anymore? And then I would understand the families would be upset and be like, why aren't you? And then they can't really say, and then they blame the law enforcement is usually what happens.
That would be the toughest predicament to be in.
Oh my gosh, yes.
If you found the person and they're like, no, I don't want people to know where I'm at,
closing it,
and you can't tell the family that would be so tough.
That would be horrid, but goodness gracious. But
I'm glad I'm not in that position.
Yeah.
I have to do something like that.
Yes. So I do know that there is a Crime Stoppers reward. I believe it's $3,000 through Crime Stoppers up to $10,000 with family contributions.
I believe they just changed cold cases. I believe they're all $10,000 now.
Okay.
Oh.
Yes.
Okay. Perfect. That's amazing.
I'd have to look at that for sure, but I believe all cold cases are up to up to $10,000.
If anyone listening has any information about Keith Mann's disappearance out of Wichita Falls, Texas, please call the local authorities, call Wichita Falls Police Department. I don't have their phone number on hand.
I do. It's 940-761-7917. That's directly to Cold Case Detective Love. Brad Love, or you can email him at william.love@wfpd.net or Crime Stoppers always 940-322-9888.
And Detective John Laughlin. I would throw his name out there too, because he definitely, I think he's now in charge of all the cold cases at this point.
Oh, is he? Okay.
Yes.
I wasn't sure who took over all of those.
Detective Laughlin did, and that's who we've been able to talk to for these. So that was, that's the person to ask for.
Okay. Awesome.
Perfect.
Yep.
Thank y'all for joining us. Is there anything else you want to talk about? Sorry, we just came to a crashing halt there.
There's nothing really I can think of to talk about. I mean, thank you guys for having us on.
Getting the word out.
Yeah, definitely.
Thank you for coming on.
Absolutely. We love doing these things. Anything to get these cases out there, for sure. I mean, that was one thing that I had a passion for doing these, because I'd done stories on cold cases and it just has always intrigued me. I watch all the Netflix documentaries. I mean, they've always intrigued me. And so then when I mentioned it to Curtis, he was so excited to be a part of it too. And so thankfully we both have a passion for it. And, but at the end of the day, we just want to help the families out and as best we can. So,
same. If there's anything we can do for y'all to help get some cases out, if there's something that's not getting the attention it deserves, which no cold cases, but if there's something that we can help with, please don't hesitate to reach out. We'll definitely do what we can.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you guys.
Thank you.